I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yes, it's Christmas time, a time of giving and receiving gifts, and what better gift to provide the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast this holiday season than the gift of a donation. Everything you listen to, everything you read on the website, see on our social media channels, or access through our newsletter, it's all been done by me, Ben Johnson, the founder, editor, and host of the Kung Fu Movie Guide. And any donation that is made to the show goes directly back into funding the upkeep of this podcast and all the other elements that support it. So if you do have any spare pennies knocking about the place, then as a little Christmas gift, why not head over to paypal.me/kungfumovieguide. When you go there, you'll see my face and the send option. Click on that and please donate whatever you can to keep the show on the road. Thank you, Foo followers around the world, for all your support over the years, and to anyone who has donated so far, thank you so much. Happy holidays, listeners, Merry Christmas, and now let's get on with the show.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello, hello, hello there, Foo followers everywhere around the world. Welcome. Welcome one and all to part two of our special two-part end of year show 2022. From your friends at the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. My name is Ben Johnson. I am the host of this podcast. And for this two-part end of year show, I am joined by my very special guest. He is the author of Life of Action, Volume 1 and 2. He is your friend and mine. He is Mike Fury. Hello there, Mike.
Hello again, Ben. Lovely to see you. Although you never really left.
Listen, I do hope you're all having a good time wherever you are in the world listening to this episode. You may recall in part one, we discussed the stories that grabbed the headlines during the year 2022. And we also looked back at some of the guests who have appeared on this podcast so far this year. And we also unwrapped some Christmas presents because, after all, it is the festive season. But now I think it is time for the moment we have all been waiting for. On this episode, Mike and I will be highlighting our best and worst fight-centric action films from the year 2022, as well as sharing some of the thoughts of our listeners. Over the last few weeks, you have been messaging us with your favourite fight films of the year over our social media accounts, either on Twitter at KF Movie Guide or on Instagram and Facebook at Kung Fu Movie Guide, or via our website, kungfumovieguide.com, and the email address, which is, as always, hello@kungfumovieguide.com. A huge thank you to everyone who has got in touch. It really is great when we do hear directly from you guys. We won't be able to read out everyone's messages, but thank you to everyone who did let us know their favourite fight films of the year. Okay, Mike, I think we are now ready to go through the best and worst films of the year. So let's start with the worst martial arts film of 2022. The worst martial arts film of 2022. Mike, I know you do hate doing this, but let's just see if... You put anything
just
down?
Preempt by saying I try to not be too negative with it. So, and usually, even if something is flawed, there's some positives to be drawn in some regard. So that's why, of course, there's something that will, you know, you will not rank as highly as the others. But I try to stand the positive end of the spectrum. However, occasionally there are things that not only may not measure up, but might actively piss us off a bit. And
yeah,
that's what happened to me here.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
So I'll lead into, based on the list that we compiled, The Man from Toronto. Okay. And this is, of course, the Netflix film starring Kevin Hart and Woody Harrelson, two people I'm a big fan of each of them as actors. Kevin Hart's character is mistaken to be this legendary assassin, the man from Toronto, who is actually Woody Harrelson, both of which are potential ingredients to, you know, have a fun cocktail. Yeah,
that sounds good.
But it's, it was unfortunately, it's neither funny nor exciting in the action sense. It was just, you know, both have worked on films far better and far more entertaining. And when, we're going to get into this, I'm sure, but there is such a thing as being quippy when it's not, I don't feel it's funny or necessary, but maybe the action's good, you know, lean into your strengths. But when something's trying to be action-packed and funny and literally neither aspect delivers, that's the disappointment. It's kind of depressing when so many of these streaming-led films feel like they're made by algorithm.
Mm.
It's like, literally, it could be an automated spreadsheet combining, you know, element, you know, Kevin Hart's comedy does well on Netflix, plus action, plus this equals this. And it's like an algorithm calculated formula, which doesn't, you know, factor in any heart or soul or characters we care about. And it's quite a disappointing thing to have these, clearly the budget, the resources, the talent involved. Yeah. And we literally know they're capable of more, but obviously the box that they're put into doesn't allow them to do
that. There's a few Netflix movies like this, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Red Notice, that film with The Rock, I thought was similar. Mm-hmm. That felt like that had been sort of scripted by an algorithm. Mm-hmm. The film, I would say, that actually just disappointed me the most was Bullet Train.
Yep.
I don't know how you felt about Bullet Train,
Mike. I wasn't a big fan, I have to confess.
And it's a shame because it's David Leitch, and I really like, obviously, John Wick, co-director, mm-hmm. Atomic Blonde, Deadpool 2, Hobbs mm-hmm. and Shaw, I thought was really good fun as well. And I think this might be his first misfire that he's done. An action comedy where the comedy just didn't work for me at all. It sounds a bit like The Man from Toronto, actually, where that the comedy is.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I personally didn't connect with the comedy of Bullet Train, but I've read that a lot of people did find it funny and entertaining. So again, we know that comedy is very subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Bullet Train for me, similar to what you said, I enjoyed the action, I enjoyed the quirks of many of the characters, but yeah, the action was just didn't work for me. And actually, you know, Dave Leitch, big fan of him, again, somebody I've had the opportunity to interview in the past, and he's in the first Life of Action. I've really enjoyed seeing, you know, his career trajectory, but I'm really craving for the time he tackles something a bit meatier story-wise. He tends to favour, not that it's a bad thing, it's obviously just tonally just different. There's a lighter comedic aspect to it, except for, obviously, the first John Wick co-directing, and also Atomic Blonde, this probably remains my favourite of his films. But with, like, Hobbs and Shaw, Deadpool, and this, there's a lightness, like a bantery lightness to it, which isn't a bad thing, but I think I would love to see him, because he's such, he's technically a very good director.
Yeah.
And clearly has the, you know, the talent and the drive to, I think, pull off narrative action storytelling. I'd like to see him tackle something a bit darker and edgy, and just interesting to see how he shifts gears in that sense. But yeah, for me, Bullet Train, I was entertained largely, and I enjoyed a lot of the homages to, like, the Japanese Yakuza stuff, the comic book elements, and the cast was great, but I didn't, the humor was something that really, it felt was too wacky and zany for me, and it didn't work, it just didn't land.
And unfortunately, it's another dud for Andrew Koji.
Mm-hmm.
What a wonderful actor. He was fantastic in Snake Eyes, and he was wasted in that mm-hmm. movie as well. Really hope there's a good vehicle for Andrew Koji coming soon as well.
You sure you want to talk this out?
Not particularly, no.
Okay,
look, we've got off to a bad start there. The only way is up now, Mike.
Yeah.
So that's enough of the worst films of the year. Let's get on to the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. It is now time to run down the best of the best. These are the films that we love the most in 2022 in a section that we like to call the best martial arts films of 2022. The best martial arts films of 2022. Okay, so just to remind our listeners, we have compiled a list of fight-centric action films that came out in 2022. The full list has been available on our website, kungfumovieguide.com, for some time now, so you can log on to the website and take a look at the full list right now. We'll put a link to it in the podcast description. As is the tradition with this show, I specifically asked Mike not to tell me what his top five films are, so that is left as a little bit of a surprise. So, Mike, before we get into it, I would say this year was tricky to compile a top five. A lot of the films on the list are perfectly fine examples of fight movies, barring a few exceptions. There was nothing too spectacular in this list this year. I don't know if you agree with that, just generally.
Yeah, it felt like... I think it's funny, going back to years past, and I do mean years past, not in recent times. Traditionally, it was the big tentpole blockbusters, the big movies, didn't necessarily deliver on the action front so much. Obviously, blockbuster spectacle action they did, but not like the intricacies of fight scenes and so on was always lacking. And we'd always lean on the indie side for, you know, the quality filmmaking in that department. And now it's obviously it's changed. You know, we've got increasingly action fluent and highly experienced stunt coordinators and second unit directors handling these big films, and the action's, you know, gone up enormously.
Absolutely. Like
with especially the Marvel films or DC, the you know, any kind of big blockbuster, it's extremely rare to see poorly edited action. I think that's kind of doesn't happen much anymore. Yep. I don't see it as often, certainly. But now what's also happened is the indie side, there's definitely been a saturation of, dare I say, I hate this word, content. I'm using air quotes. Content on the streaming platforms. Obviously, moving away from the DTV side, now it's like streaming films. A huge saturation, which means the quality varies wildly. Mm. So we still get the films that we would look to for good action and good fight scenes. And the filmmakers and actors are still doing those, I guess, in increasingly challenging, limited budgets, resources, and so on. But there's also, you know, there's also pretty piss poor fight-centric films on these platforms. So look, it's still there, but I guess with the saturation means that it feels somewhat diluted. You have to really dig for the gems, it feels like. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that the opportunities are still there for filmmakers to make the films that they want, albeit the circumstances seem to be a bit more challenging.
Okay, Mike, so before we get going, quick note on the release dates. As always, some of the foreign titles in this list still haven't been officially released here in the UK, which means we haven't been able to see some of these films. Even some of the American movies have been released quite widely in the USA, but not here. So, for example, Blade of the 47 Ronin, that is on Netflix in the USA, but it's not available here. The Chinese film Wolfpack, that's Max Chang's movie, that got a Welgo USA release in North America, but that's not available here either. I couldn't find the French film Kung Fu Zora anywhere here in the UK. Mm-hmm. We're just getting our excuses in early.
Yeah.
We do try our best, though, most years, don't we, Mike, to try and cover as much ground as possible. Just on that point, though, why do you think the UK does sort of get sidelined a little bit, especially when it comes to action movies and definitely world cinema in general? It isn't always easy to see these movies.
Yeah, I think it is getting better, but I also think this isn't exclusive to this genre, but the disparity and the massive spreading between streaming platforms makes it quite hard to find stuff. You know, it's either in cinemas or it's not, or it's iTunes. So I think we've talked about searching iTunes, then Netflix, then Amazon, then Apple TV, then something else, then something. And it's quite challenging sometimes, or maybe on, you know, maybe something is on DVD or Blu-ray. I mean, it's always been this way, as we know, in the past. Except now with the internet, you're probably more mindful compared to previous times.
Did you cram a lot of viewing in over the last few weeks, or had you seen a lot of these movies throughout the year as they were coming out?
It made me realise that, I mean, I had watched quite a few things throughout the year, but it made me acutely aware of what I was due to catch up on, so I had a nice little late binge, I think.
Yeah.
But it's a good excuse to do it, and I thank you for being, as always, I always draw attention to this, Ben is super organized. you know, you don't just, if you left me to my own devices, I wouldn't know what to do. But you compile a nice list. Obviously, you've shared that on the website, I think.
Yeah.
You send it over. You're very good with notes and scripts and plans of what we're going to cover and super organized. So I do very little work, basically. I had to do
quite a bit of cramming as well. I saw quite a few movies this week, saw one yesterday. Mm-hmm. As we've said before, the tradition is that I don't know what Mike's top five is, so I am excited to hear what you have selected this year. Without any further ado, let's get on with it. Let's kick off then with your number five. Number five! I'm excited to hear this because it's an odd little mix of films this year, Mike. So what have you gone for your number five?
Well, my number five is The Gray Man.
Ah, okay. Yes.
So we know this to be a Netflix film. They're, I think, the record-breaking most expensive film to date.
I believe so, yeah.
I think it's had a long kind of gestation period in terms of, you know, pre-production going through various forms, but it's based on the novel by an author called Mark Greene, who's best known as a collaborator of Tom Clancy in latter days. So it's that kind of espionage, Bourne-esque
sort of spy
world of spy
stuff.
Thrillers.
Globetrotting.
Yeah, and look, I mean, what I'll say about this is, so, you know, it stars Ryan Gosling, Chris Evans, Ana de Armas, and I had a lot of fun with this. So I would say, and it's directed by the Russo brothers, who I'm a fan of from their Marvel work.
Captain America, the Avengers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Story-wise, real quick, it doesn't require a huge amount of explanation. It's, you know, there's a character in prison. He's recruited by a kind of CIA handler for one of these, you know, quite derivative stories of we need somebody with no ties, no associations, who, you know, has a hairline temper, who get the job done at all costs, and then goes into this secret CIA kind of assassin program. My biggest critique, which became apparent quite quickly when you see it, and it'll be interesting, you know, other people may or may not have this view, it was very derivative. The script was fairly weak. The story was like no effort had been made to make this any more original than, again, just riffing on Bourne and this kind of thing. But what I really enjoyed was, Ryan Gosling, I'm a big fan of Ryan Gosling. It kind of reminded me, and then later I read up on some stuff which kind of echoed the sentiment, is how cool would it be to see him in a franchise, an action franchise type of thing? Because we know from the likes of, I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of his work from drama, comedy and so on, but, you know, Drive or Only God Forgives, he's a great actor, but he's also got really good action chops.
Yeah.
And it would be really fun to see him in a new non superhero kind of modern day spy type franchise.
Yeah.
And I think he was great in this role, balanced the kind of the, you know, he always carries the serious tone well, but there was a bit of light-hearted quippy humor. Good one-liners, handled the action chops well. Chris Evans is in there with a funny mustache.
He's great.
But again, kind of plays it up and choose the scenery a bit, but it's fun to watch. But, you know, basically, despite the shortcomings of being quite derivative and kind of predictable along the way, I just thought it was a good example of being very entertaining and well delivered, well executed. When the Russos kind of reverted to like Marvel world of how they would have done the action, that's where it was at its weakest.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of good hand to hand fight
scenes.
There
was actually, yeah. That's
shootouts
true.
And just again the character development they achieved through the fight scenes, mm-hmm. and it felt like a good opening chapter to this to a franchise, and I would be interested to see if they did more and where that would go. But based on that, that's why I put it in as number five.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of our listeners as well enjoyed The Grey Man on Instagram. Kevin Howard, aka Kevo5987, wrote The Grey Man. Ryan Gosling was great. I enjoyed the plot and especially the action and fight scenes. Okay, my number five is Violent Night.
Okay.
So this is the new one from 87 North. That's David Leitch and Kelly McCormick's production company. And they've had a pretty decent hit rate so far. If you think of Nobody, which was, I think, one of our films of the year last year. Kate as well for Netflix. And Bullet Train, which we just mentioned a moment ago. Didn't quite work for me, but it was a really big hit. This is basically a one-joke movie. So it's Die Hard, but with Santa Claus. And through some kind of Christmas magic, it does sustain its charm and excitement throughout. And I do think it's mostly down to David Harbour, who plays Santa. And he plays Santa as this depressed, alcoholic, overweight, cranky guy flying around on his sleigh on Christmas Eve. He's half pissed and he's magically going down chimneys to give out toys to kids on his nice list. Mm-hmm. And he just happens upon a luxury home during a raid when terrorists break in, trying to steal the family loot and holding everyone hostage. So Santa then channels his inner Viking and starts cracking skulls. And I don't know about you, Mike, but I really want to see that Santa origin story. Where it flashes back. He says something like, "I wasn't always Santa Claus." And then it does this flashback to him being some Viking warrior with a big hammer. And I was sat there thinking, that's a prequel. We need that prequel. Yeah. David Harbour is so great and cuddly in Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. And I think he just oozes this natural compassion and charm. And even when he's going on the rampage and he's hammering people in the face, he still manages to sustain that avuncularity, shall we say. Some of the more sentimental bits didn't quite work for me so well, and it does feel a little bit inconsequential, but I did laugh out loud at quite a few bits during this film. I do think it's just funny seeing, you know, in quotation marks, the real Santa just going on this violent killing spree. I think it's quite funny. A side note to this is the fight choreographer is Jonathan Eusebio Jojo, and he did speak about this movie on this podcast, so go back and check out that episode if you want to hear more from Jojo. Violent Night is my number five. It's currently on general release here in the UK. Bit of feedback from the Foo followers on Instagram. Ross Boyask: Violent Night, an unexpected, well-written, gorgeously executed treat. And also on Instagram, Miladin Kulich has said, Violent Night, a diehard knockoff with Santa trying to rescue a girl and her family from terrorists. Not only does this movie deliver some great gory action scenes, it's also really funny with a social commentary on how Christmas became more about the money than love. There you go. That's my number five, Violent Night. Okay, so let's move on now to our number four. Number four! What is your fourth favourite fight-centric film of 2022?
My fourth favourite, Ben, is Black Panther: Wakanda Forever.
Ah, interesting. Yeah.
This story, it follows King T'Challa's death with the invading forces around the world targeting Wakanda's vibranium. I was a big fan of the first Black Panther. I thought this was really good. I may have even enjoyed it more, dare I say, than the previous.
The sequel more than the first one? Okay.
Possibly. Although, obviously, very sad, lacking the late, great Chadwick Boseman. I did think it was very, very nice, very beautifully handled in terms of how they transitioned his loss and his part of the story. But they passed the torch very well to Letitia Wright. To put it bluntly, how can you... I know that I noticed on the titles and a lot of the marketing, I mean, clearly Black Panther is the brand, but it's like tiny Black Panther, big Wakanda Forever. Because we've lost Black Panther, what do you do from there? And obviously, without spoiling it for anyone who hasn't seen it, there is a kind of a way to pass the torch of Black Panther and what does that mean going forward. But I think they handled that well. They evolved that... quite literally the passing of the torch, I guess. Great set pieces, you know, action sequences, the fighting, of course, which we will talk about closely. But I just thought the story and the evolution of the character and these, I guess, the ensemble of characters that we've got to know through the first film was handled really well. And these new, I'm kind of spoiling it a bit, but the villains and the new characters they introduced were very compelling. And again, when Marvel do this well, very multifaceted characters where... you know, the villains are not necessarily all two-dimensional, dastardly evil. There's a multifaceted aspect to them and their struggles and where they're coming from. A very long film, very epic. I mean, even by Marvel standards, it was like nearly 3 hours long, I think, in the runtime.
Was it really that long?
But I have to say it was entertaining. It was very entertaining. Yeah. It moved quickly. It was very brisk and ticked the boxes for me, Ben.
Good stuff, Mike. Oh, this is my favourite superhero movie from this year, and it's in my honourable mentions.
Okay.
This is so not it didn't in make my the top five.
Wow, interesting.
I'll tell you why this didn't make the top five, and I was agonizing over this, but when I think back to it, it's not the action and the fight scenes that I remember. It's the way they dealt with the passing of, don't forget, the character of Black Panther, T'Challa, but also the passing of Chadwick Boseman in real life. And the film somehow managed to do both. It's a very meta, it's a weird experience watching this film, because I think they tackled that subject very well. Now when I think about it, it's not the action that I think about with this film, so purely for that reason alone, I thought, I don't think it can hold up in a in my top five fight-centric action films. Angela Bassett, my gosh, she was brilliant in this film as T'Challa's mother, the Queen of Wakanda. A lot to celebrate with this movie, absolutely. My number four is Baby Assassins. This is technically a 2022 release here in the UK and also in North America. I think Wildgo USA released it there. I found this on Apple TV, this movie, so it is out there. Baby Assassins is a dark Japanese action comedy about two high school girls who work as assassins for some shady organization. It's never quite clear who their bosses actually are, but they seem to be on the quote-unquote good side. They sort of kill a lot of Yakuza members and people like that. They get into trouble when they kill quite a prominent Yakuza member, and then the gangsters go after them. That's one side of the film, but the other side is this quite tender coming-of-age story about the two of them living together and trying to negotiate their roles as young women in Japanese society. One of the girls, Mahiro, is the shy, quiet type. She's happy with her head in a book or training in martial arts. And her friend, Chisato, is more outgoing, sociable. She's really keen to make friends and actually make a serious attempt at finding a job and trying to live a sort of normal life. And that's obviously at odds with the violent and actually quite brutal work that they do in killing people. So I would say the film doesn't always get that balance quite right between, you know, whether you're actually supposed to like these girls or not. It can leave the viewer, as you're watching it, in quite an uncomfortable position. But the way I read the film was more as a retaliation against the social norms and conformity that they're sort of rebelling against. Neither of them can fully express themselves in normal society. It just so happens that they can express themselves fully in their work as assassins. So there aren't too many fight scenes in this, but the fight scenes that are in this movie are very good. And that is thanks to the action director Kensuke Sonomura. He's a prolific action director, been working for decades in Japanese cinema. Bushido Man, one of my favourites of his from 2013. He made his directorial debut in 2019 with Hydra. Definitely go and check out Hydra if you haven't seen that. And I'm very much looking forward to his next movie as a director, which is called Bad City. And I think that's coming very soon. So, interesting movie, Baby Assassins. Yeah. And I can see it being quite a divisive movie. But I quite enjoyed it. So, yeah, Baby Assassins, available on Apple TV here in the UK. That is my
thank you for telling me. So I haven't seen that one, Ben, but thank you for telling me it's on Apple TV.
It is.
You have Apple TV. And also, it's, I mean, it does sound up, right up my street, but also it feels like we haven't had a Japanese action-led vehicle for a while, unless perhaps I've missed something. But also, I do like, same thing, I think, similar with South Korean. The Japanese lean hard into the violent action.
Yes.
So
yes,
they never shy. They never shy away from, you know, it doesn't have to be peppered throughout. When you do get it, the violence counts.
Yeah. There's a little bit of feedback from the Foo followers on Baby Assassins on Instagram. Mr. KO. The movie Baby Assassins was a surprise hit for me, especially with the last fight of the movie. Day Shift was also very good. Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. KO. And on Instagram, Nick Knack Mattywack writes, I think Bullet Train was my favourite that came out this year as an overall movie, but I love the fight choreography in Baby Assassins. Mm-hmm. So there we go. Bit of feedback there from the loyal Foo followers on our social media accounts. Okay then, Mike, I think it is now time for our number three. Number three. Okay, your number three, Mike.
My number three echoes something that you said earlier, okay. Which is Violent Night. So, I mean, without, I guess, repeating ourselves, it was just a very enjoyable enjoyable Christmas film, anti-Christmas film, perhaps. But, you know, inventive with the action, did a lot of fun stuff, although obviously it is pretty violent.
Yeah.
But good balance with the humour and the human side. I also liked something we didn't mention, opposite David Harbour as Santa Claus, who was great. Obviously, John Leguizamo, who's always very fun to watch. Yep. He played Mr. Scrooge. I liked that his
was that his character?
He dubs himself as Mr. Scrooge, yeah. And then his team all have code names with things like Gingerbread. There's Frosty. There's Sugar Plum. They all have like funny, cutesy Christmas names, which was quite fun. And I liked Die Hard references, Home Alone references. And I think it really appeals to, especially, you know, people like ourselves of a certain age that grew up with these films. Both, I think we can, you know, we're not too grown up for Home Alone. It's like we enjoy the Home Alone gags, and obviously represented here in a very violent way.
But Home Alone is violent as well. People forget that. It's
nice references, but it's filmmakers of a certain age, and it speaks to viewers of a certain age.
Yeah.
Referencing these films that we love and grew up with, kind of bringing them back with a fresh spin. I think as well, Dave Leitch and Kelly McCormick at the helm as producers, and the 8711 guys generally are really good with music as well. They use a lot of music, good use of soundtrack to action.
Brian Adams
was in there. Yeah, we were talking about good old Brian earlier. And a lot of Canadians in the cast, so I'll be interested whether that was a Canadian thing to use, Brian. Maybe. But just, you know, again, without going back into what we said before, just really enjoyed it as a fun, breezy, entertaining ride that still was compelling and tugged at the heartstrings a little and got the adrenaline going at other times. So it was a good fun journey.
Okay, so my number three, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Is The Woman King.
Okay.
This is a fascinating story based on, it's a true story as well, of the Agoji, who were a real fighting unit. They were instrumental in protecting the West African kingdom of Dahomey, one of the most powerful African states at the time. And this is set in the early 19th century, when Dahomey grew very powerful and very rich because of its involvement in the slave trade. This film has a compelling, muscular, very physical central performance from Viola Davis.
Mm-hmm.
She's amazing. And surely an Oscar nomination will be heading her way for this mm-hmm. movie. So she plays the fictionalized character of Naniska,
mm-hmm.
who is a battle-scarred leader of the all-woman Agoji fighting force. And the story of the film follows a young warrior called Nawi, who trains hard and rises in the ranks of the Agoji. So both Viola Davis and the director Gina Prince-Bythewood have spoken about the struggle that they went through about bringing this incredible true story to the big screen. Davis said in an interview, "Hollywood studios like it when women are pretty and blonde, or close to pretty and blonde. All of these women are dark, and they're beating men." So there you mm-hmm. go. That was about the struggle they had about trying to bring this story to the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a perfect movie. There are quite a few formulaic beats to the film. It does lean on some quite predictable plot devices. However, I think Gina Prince-Bythewood did a wonderful job at the world building in this movie. It's really evocative, uses lots of stunning locations, the costumes are great, the music's fantastic, the fight scenes are really crunchy, and they're tinged with this sort of violent retribution going on, a bit like RRR, where it shows the British colonialists just getting their asses kicked. This has similar scenes where the Agoji are just beating up these European slave traders. They're quite powerful moments. There's something quite pleasurable about seeing that as well. Special shout out to Brixton's very own Shayna West. She is the Samurider on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I know that she had a little role in Black Widow. She gets a more substantial role here. I've been following her on Instagram for years. She's fantastic. Look out for Shyna West. She's going to be a big star. There's lots of movies that she's involved in that are yet to come out. I'm sure we'll be talking more about her in, you know, on future shows, Mike. So The Woman King, really enjoyed it. Another film I saw this week, actually, that is on general release still here in the UK. Bit of feedback from the Foo followers on The Woman King on Instagram. Yafet Pruitt wrote, Day Shift and The Woman King, they both stood out as good movies overall. Day Shift being just hilarious and The Woman King having an overall great story. They did also have some great action scenes. So there we go, Mike. That was my number three, The Woman King.
Very nice.
Here we go then. Let's move on. This is our number two.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Number two. Gosh, okay, we're getting down to it now, Mike. Yep. So your number two is?
My number two is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
So I have to say that I absolutely loved this film as a complete film, as a complete package. And it kind of, I think maybe, we can talk about in the last episode, we spoke about it briefly.
We did.
But absolutely wacky, zany, insane. It's challenging to know how to even describe it. But it's written and directed by two great filmmakers, Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert, collectively known as Daniels, and then produced by the Russo brothers, Anthony and Joe Russo. And I guess, you know, at its core, it centers around a Chinese-American immigrant lady called Evelyn, who runs a laundrette, isn't it, with her partner and with her family.
Yep.
And in this story, she's played by Michelle Yeoh while being audited by the IRS, or I guess it would be HMRC if it was.
It would be, yeah.
A humorously dull kind of springboard while being audited by the IRS, discovers that she must connect with parallel universe versions of herself, alternate scenarios which could have been to prevent a powerful being from destroying the multiverse as a whole. It's a very wacky, genre-bending, wild film. Incredibly original, inventive. I think we said last time, and I certainly said, haven't seen anything like it. Can't think of any comparison. It's got elements of, you know, comedy, very black comedy, very silly kind of slapstick comedy. There's sci-fi, fantasy, there's martial arts, there's moments it goes into animation. But at its core, a very poignant, moving story focusing on family, and it was a very sweet, moving film and super entertaining. Michelle Yeoh's brilliant. We know her to be brilliant from all past films, but this is a such a good showcase for her, and very inventive. And again, I think we said last time, for anyone who hadn't heard the previous episode, but it's kind of reassuring to see such an unusual and original film doing so well, that it's not just it's kind of an underdog indie film that no one's really heard of. And, you know, it's actually become, I mean, perhaps it started as that or a bit more under the radar, but certainly through the critical acclaim it received and the word of mouth and the commercial success, it's achieved a huge amount of attention. And it's great to see something that you enjoy, and that's good, but to see it be a success is a good thing and should be celebrated, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more, yeah. Mike.
Also, quick shout out for Jonathan Ki-Hu Kwan, best known from Goonies, Indiana Jones, and I believe it's his first adult acting role for a number of years. And he was brilliant in it, absolutely fantastic. But the cast is great. I mean, all around, you've got Jamie Lee Curtis, James Hong's in there, Harry Shum Jr. Yeah. with the weird thing in his head.
The rat, yeah. What's the raccoon attire,
yeah,
or something?
It's, but yeah, it's incredibly entertaining. So many great characters. It's great to see that people are enjoying it.
It's really broken through into the mainstream, hasn't it? And being a film which, when I initially heard about it, thought it would just be a sort of quirky, offbeat film and it wouldn't be out in the cinema for very long. So, you know, you might as well book your tickets and see it while you can.
Yeah.
It's still out there, still going strong, and Oscar noms. It looks like it's heading that way as well. So that's just really encouraging and great to see. Some really positive feedback on Everything Everywhere All at Once from the Foo followers. From Twitter, Christopher Evans, Michelle Yeoh's passion project shows how diverse characters in movies can be. Colin Squire on Twitter, my favourite film from this year has to be Everything Everywhere All at Once. This film was an oddly brilliant masterpiece. On Instagram, Gerda Bjork said Everything Everywhere All at Once because of everything. So that's the reason why they enjoyed it. And on email, Lee Mitchell, for me this year has got to be Everything Everywhere All at Once. What a movie that was. It kicked ass. Michelle Yeoh, awesome as always. And Ki Hoo Kwan, why didn't he do more movies? Well, there are reasons for that. And it's definitely worth going online and reading a lot of interviews with Ki Hoo Kwan, who is now finally enjoying this wonderful career. He'll be in the next season of Loki as well, which is wonderful to see. So that's your number two, Everything Everywhere All at Once. So my number two is Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday. Yeah, yeah. So I think I know where this is going, but we'll see. Okay, this is top tier Scott Adkins stuff we're discussing here. I would actually go so far to say this is probably his best film so far at capturing that fast-paced Hong Kong style fight choreography. All the fight scenes in this movie are just great. They're really great. Scott came on the show obviously a month or so ago to talk about this movie, so do go back and listen to that if you haven't already. We do go into quite a bit of detail about the making of this movie. This is the sequel to 2018's Accident Man. That was Scott's dream project, based on a comic book that he read growing up. It's been adapted for the screen by Scott's good friend Stu Small. This sequel sees Scott as the leading man. He's also a producer on the movie, the story developer. He's one of the fight choreographers. So he's put a lot of work into this one, and it really does pay off. It sees him return as the assassin Mike Fallon. He disguises all of his kills as accidents. He finds himself in Malta, up to his old tricks again, and soon falls foul of the mafia there, who kidnap his good buddy Finicky Fred, played by Perry Benson. It's got a bit of Guy Ritchie. It's got a bit of Edgar Wright. It's got a lot of Jackie Chan, a bit of Yen Wu Ping in there as well. Huge credit to the supporting cast, all the stunt performers and martial artists who do great turns in this movie. Sarah Chang, I've not seen a better role for her yet, so I think it's one of her best roles. Sarah Chang plays Mike Fallon's sidekick, sort of Kato to his Inspector Clouseau. And Andy Long is brilliant. He's sort of the end boss in this movie. He's absolutely electrifying. Surely one of the best young talents that we have working in martial arts action cinema today. He demands the best out of Scott in probably one of his best fight scenes, I would say. And the whole thing was done in like 20 days or something. It's incredible. So Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday, that's available on digital platforms here in the UK. That is my number two. Bit of feedback from the Foo followers here on Twitter. Christopher Evans enjoyed Accident Man 2 because of its combination of British humour and keeping the Hong Kong action tradition alive. Colin Squire again, Accident Man 2 was brilliant from start to finish. Ross Boyask on Instagram, Accident Man 2, which easily tops the original movie in terms of the humour and tone, and the fights are very exciting. Mladen Kulich on Instagram, Accident Man 2, this sequel goes crazier than the first, and Scott Adkins deserves more recognition as an amazing action star. on Facebook, Steve Moore, Accident Man 2 is the best and also has some amazing fights like the one with Andy Long and has great comedy, good story too. Well done again, Scott and crew. Fingers crossed for part 3. Is there going to be a disc released of this classic too, as I love physical media? Don't know is the answer to that at this stage. I know it's available on digital platforms, but
I've actually just quite recently I saw on I believe it was maybe on Twitter or something like that, Scott responded to somebody saying there is going to be a physical release in the US at least, which may mean that the UK and elsewhere follows.
Okay, so good stuff. That is good to know. On Instagram, Cameron Levins, Accident Man 2, The Final Fight is a Showstopper. And GentleBro1995 on Instagram loved Accident Man 2, The Clown Fight. Really enjoyed the clown fight. That's obviously with Bo Fowler, your friend of mine. So I think I know where this is going now, but let's see. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe there's Bring Him Back Dead might steal the number one spot. But let's see. Okay, then. So, Mike, here we go. Let's reveal our number one. Number one! Okay, Mike. I think I know what this is.
So, my number one pick of the best... you could say the best martial arts film of 2022, the best fight-centric film of 2022, is Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday.
There it is, yeah.
And I'm sure echoing many of the sentiments you've just shared, I think it's a excellent top-tier Scott Adkins movie.
Yeah.
Obviously, anyone who's familiar with his work knows the standard we've come to expect. I'm sure the standard he expects of himself and how he pushes himself. I was a big fan of the first film, obviously under Jesse Johnson as director, but I have heard that, you know, they felt they didn't quite get the tone right, or as in line, I suppose, with the comic book and the aesthetic and the style as much. So that's why they, you know, maybe had a slight change of direction. Here we've got the Kirby brothers, George and Harry Kirby, new filmmakers, but very talented guys, very technically proficient as well. In the way they capture and shoot fights. He's also with some stunt and action background, which obviously helps. And under, I guess, Scott's tutelage and his direction in terms of knowing the comic inside out and being a passion project for him, I think they really raise the bar. There's a lot of comedy here, as you've talked about, a lot of gags, very British humour, which I think was impressive that they managed to pull that off and made the decision to pull that off. Bearing in mind, I imagine Scott's got, I think we know Scott's got a very international audience, but the fact that they really lean so hard into the British sensibility and sense of humour is really good. Obviously, I mean, it's good for us Brits anyway, we're going to enjoy that, but the fact that the Americans, hopefully, and other countries will enjoy it. In all honesty, for me, the humour didn't all land. It wasn't completely to my taste, not that it needs to be, it's not for me personally, but again, with, you know, focusing in on what we're talking about, the best fight centric film of 2022, I don't think, and I'm looking at you across the table there, don't think anyone can say any of the other films we've talked about have better fight scenes than this. And I'll draw reference, I'm just quantifying this. If we were to say favorite film of 2022,
yes.
I mean, there's other things I can think of, whether it's Top Gun Maverick that is not even in this list at all, or Everything Everywhere All at Once, I loved as a whole entire piece of filmmaking. But I think as a fight-centric film, I would genuinely, confidently say you can't do better than this. And the way they've brought the Hong Kong style aesthetic, obviously Scott's immense martial arts filmmaking experience anyway, and the quality and the caliber of the fight scenes, so many standout fight scenes. Andy Long's obviously great, you mentioned. I was a big fan, actually. My favorite fight was Bo Fowler's. I would love to see in the future, hoping for a third film, to lean more into the wacky and the zany. So like, I loved Bo's fight the best personally, and again, that kind of comic book aesthetic with these wacky characters, I'd love to see Mike Fallon take on more of these sorts of characters. So it doesn't actually, you know, as much as the other choreography is great, and I did love Andy Long's character and Sarah Chang's characters, I'd love to see more exploration into these crazy aspects, and Mike Fallon has to take on these unhinged wacky characters. That's just a personal thing for me. For the attributes that we're talking about, the best fight centric film of 2022, come on, Ben. Fight me, bro.
And I'm sure the internet will also agree with you on this. all of that is absolutely valid, and it was an amazing film. I absolutely loved Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday.
It would seem that the CEO has put out a contract on my son, Dante. I need you to protect my son at all costs. Do you understand?
And there's a gaggle of assassins about to turn up. Kill every last one of you.
So you better get your skates on.
There's a proper game on.
But my number one film, Mike, of the year.
Yes.
I think you can guess it.
I can guess it. What do you say?
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And I did wrestle with this, but I'll tell you for why.
You didn't wrestle very hard. You tapped out early.
I am such a fan of this film. And I think having gone back to it, it's on Amazon Prime, by the way, so anyone can jump in and watch it. It moved me to tears again. That having seen it now a few times, it still has that emotional resonance for me, which, granted, you make a good point. Overall, is it a good film? Yes, it is a wonderful film, but also it's such a celebration of Michelle Yeoh. Now, being a sort of lifelong and followed Michelle Yeoh's career, as we all have, I can't think of anyone else in Hollywood who could have convincingly played this role. And it plays to so many of her strengths and the extraordinary career that she's had as well. Whether she's in a glitzy ball gown at a movie premiere in those scenes that look like a Wong Kar-wai film, or she's kicking ass in the action scenes, or she's playing this stressed laundromat owner, she's struggling to connect with her daughter and her husband. No one can convincingly pull off all those different roles as well as Michelle Yeoh. She's just turned 60 as well, and it's a wonderful moment in her career now. So it is a wild, fast-paced, nutty comedy film. It's not strictly a full-on martial arts film, but I would say it's just a tribute to her amazing career. It just had to go at number one for me.
I agree with everything you said. All I'd ask is, does it have an exploding suit?
No, it doesn't. It does have...
It has hot dog fingers.
It does have hot dog fingers. I think they use dildos as nunchucks at one point.
Yes.
So it does have that. Also, just on Michelle Yeoh, she manages to lead this film and get away with all the crazy stuff in this film with such grace and commitment as well. She's totally on board for every sort of crazy aspect of this movie, and it's a huge credit to her as well. Ki Hoo Kwan, let's not forget he had a martial arts movie career in the early 90s. Breathing Fire, I think, with Bolo Young is definitely worth checking out. Jerry Trimble, of course. Huge shout out to Brian Lee and Andy Lee, the Marshall Club boys. They're having a great career in Hollywood now. That's been really encouraging to see. They've been smashing it out in films like Shang-Chi, Paper Tigers, Luc Van Tien as well, which is Andy Long's movie. Brian was in Shadow Master as well, had a really good fight scene in that. Really happy for those guys. Really great to see them in this movie as well, just really strutting their stuff. So I think because it's so wacky and it had so many hidden depths to it, it just really resonated with me. I had to put it at number one, as I love Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday. So that is why that is my favourite film of the year. So we should say now, Mike, if we're going to come to some agreement here, I think we probably have a joint winner, don't we, for the best film of the year. I guess if mine is Everything Everywhere All at Once and yours is Accident Man 2.
And we've got the same
in reverse. We've got the same in reverse. Maybe there's a joint winner there.
Maybe a joint winner. I'm happy with the joint winner.
So our best film of the year is Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday and Everything Everywhere All at Once. Two very different films.
Yes.
He's waiting in the wings.
The universe.
He speaks of senseless things.
Is so much bigger than you realize.
Of all the places I could be, I just want to be here with you.
Remember our mission concerning the fate of every single world of our infinite multiverse.
There is no way I am the Evelyn you are looking for.
If we
Every rejection, every disappointment has led you here. To this moment. Don't let anything distract you from it.
Okay, great stuff. Thank you so much, Mike, for that. Before we move on from this, I think we should also shine a light on some other movies that didn't quite make the top five that we also enjoyed. Mike, do you have any honourable mentions from the long list?
I do. I think I'd give a little shout out to Day Shift, which is, of course, the directorial debut of J.J. Perry. Great stunt coordinator and OG stuntman and very talented guy. Starring Jamie Foxx, Dave Franco, Snoop Dogg as well. And, of course, Mr. Scott Adkins in there as well in a cool supporting role. This was a fun vampire action comedy. And I think I saw this in kind of the ideal situation where it was like end of a long week, Friday night, pizza, have a drink, and it's watch the movie. And it was a good kickback and enjoy ride. So, you know, hats off to those guys. J.J. Perry, I'm interested to see what he does next. I'm sure he's got a lot of interesting prospects on the horizon. It would be cool to see which kind of direction he wants to take next. As, again, one of the kind of 87-11 alumni. Yeah, it was good fun. Did you enjoy that one, Ben?
Enjoyed that. That was on my honourable mentions. Yeah, I did enjoy that movie. I just wanted to quickly shout out Carter as well on Netflix. More because this is just an amazing achievement, I think, and I don't think it actually fully works. So this is from the director of The Villainess, Young Pyong-kil. Director Young uses this real-time one-take technique for the fight scenes. He did it in The Villainess, but he just did it in the fight scenes for The Villainess. But in this movie, he uses that one-take technique, but he does it throughout the whole film. And actually, because the camera was, it's constantly moving around and blurring from one bit to the next, it's quite overwhelming and disorientating. And I don't know if you found this, Mike, when you watched it. I had to like look away from the screen at certain points. Like it was sort of too much almost.
Yeah. For me, I liked the ambition and what they were setting out to do. I actually liked it much more in the beginning, like the first kind of 5-10 minutes.
Fight in the sauna.
Yeah, they were nice. I think it's a good example of they went too far with it. They should have reined it back in. Yeah. So even things like a lot of CGI and kind of some ropier visual effects, I wish they stick more to their guns of being grounded and using the camera. Like a great example of Extraction was still used visual effects, I'm sure, but much more gritty, grainy, following, you know, camera following the character through the smoke, but using very meticulous camera angles. And even like something like One Shot, I think, did that as well.
Yeah.
For me, the one take spectacle is lost when suddenly, I mean, you can maybe see some of the edit points. That's not the biggest problem. The problem is the effects. Visual effects don't work. It snaps you out of that reality, and then you're no longer on the edge of your seat. You're just watching this kind of never-ending, almost cartoonish gimmick go. So that was a problem for me. But I liked the ambition. And I liked what they were setting out to do.
On Instagram, Thomas Frost said, "Carter, mind-blowing action scenes. The helicopter scenes was insane, and the drone footage was just wow." And Lee Mitchell on email said, "I really enjoyed Carter. They tried different things with that movie," which is definitely worth applauding. So honourable mention there to the South Korean action film Carter. Mike, any other honourable mentions, movies that almost made your list?
I'd like to give a little shout out to Shadow Master, which is produced by Pratyah Pinkial, obviously best known as the producer of many of Tony Jaa's films, Ong Bak.
Directed Ong Bak.
Ong Bak, helmed a lot of those films, but he's a producer, he's purely a producer on this one. Far from being a perfect film, but just I love this really, really off the wall, but completely leans into its kind of batshit horror elements, set inside a kind of an abandoned hospital where these squatters live.
That's right.
And this guy is hired to be they call it a night watchman, to kind of guard the squatters, but there's a demonic presence inside the hospital. It's kind of like Hellraiser-esque demons. It reminded me of Hellraiser.
I wrote part Hellraiser, part Albert Pyun. It had that kind of vibe to it.
And they're stealing the children, and this guy takes on the demonic presence. But then along the way, I mean, he's a martial artist, but this isn't really a spoiler, I guess. This is part of the whole synopsis. Along the way is killed, but then makes kind of a Faustian pact with the devil to be brought back but the devil, you know, the devil owns his soul, but in order to, in a kind of a demonic form, continue fighting this demonic presence. It's quite nutty, and it's nutty, but I really liked that it was, so for a start, it's an 18, you don't get that many, you know, 18 or R-rated for the US guys. Pretty grisly and gruesome at times, but some good fight scenes, obviously, from Pratchett, kind of come to expect. Very Tony Jaa-esque, lots of elbows and knees.
The elbows, the knees are in there. We should say we're talking about, so his name is D.Y. Sao. He's the lead in this film. Cambodian-born, raised in California. He trained Simu Liu for Shang-Chi, and he's a US national wushu team member. Yeah. This is his starring role debut. Wonderful martial artist, yes, very much influenced by Tony Jaa. This is the kind of movie they'd show at midnight at like Fright Fest, and it would get an amazing response. It's a real genre pleaser, isn't it, really?
So not perfect, but it was just, it was fun and it was inventive, and I liked that it leaned hard into the
definitely
adult action horror element.
Wonderful fight scene with Brian Lee as well, from Everything Everywhere All at Once. He is just amazing to watch. That fight scene is incredible. Comment from Foo followers, Mr. The Stray on Instagram, Shadow Master had some great choreo, so it certainly did. It's worth checking out. It gets a wider UK release next year,
early in the new year, I believe.
It is out in the USA already. Honourable mention for Alienoid here, which is a pretty bad title, isn't it? But I did see this on a screener, actually, from Wildgo USA, and I don't think it's actually released here in the UK yet. So that's partly why I wasn't sure about including it any higher. But I will just say, this is a Korean time travel action comedy about robots from the future who are protecting human beings who are being possessed by aliens. And this is throughout history, this has been happening. It's a little bit Back to the Future. It's got a bit of Highlander in there. And then when they go back in time to the 14th century, it reminded me a lot of the classic Chinese wuxia and supernatural films. So it's got a touch of a Chinese ghost story. Some of the knockabout comedy reminded me of Stephen Chow, maybe. So there's lots of reference points, but it's also a sort of sweet coming-of-age story as well about a girl that's growing up in contemporary Korea who is protected by these benevolent robots from the future who have taken on human form. It sounds really wacky. From what I could gather, this actually was a bit of a flop in South Korea when it came out, but I quite enjoyed it, actually. Alienoid, that's called. So that's coming out soon here, I believe, in the UK. Out already in the USA. Was there one other honourable mention, Mike?
I just wanted to give, on the TV side, a shout out to Gangs of London Season 2.
Of course.
Because I'm a big fan of Gangs of London. I loved the first season. A lot of people have commented the second season is quite different, and it does have somebody different at the helm. It's got Corin Hardy is kind of the main man behind the scenes and directing and leading the charge, and he's well known for horror specifically. He's made a number of great horror films, but what it favours here is the action design is still great, as you'd expect. There's a lot of memorable fight scenes and set pieces, but it really leans hard into the horror elements. So there's a lot of gore, as anyone who's seen the trailer will attest. We have Clayton Barber, who was one of the key action designers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he, you know, obviously going back to the martial law days, worked with Salmon. He did Creed and so on. So he's done a lot of good stuff. And Tim Connolly, is a great stunt coordinator who's worked. And there's some familiar faces from the UK scene, like Jean-Paul Lee.
Jean-Paul Lee's in there.
And some others. So there's a lot of there's a lot to enjoy. And I think, you know, again, tonally slightly different from the first season, but then there's still the you know, a lot of the great world building. And just been announced that season 3 will be here. So
great.
We can look forward to season 3 of Gangs of London. I'm sure that will be a couple of years away, but it's nice to have that on the horizon. A
couple of extra mentions, some favourite films from the Foo followers as well this year. So Rupture on Twitter, Christopher Evans wrote, Rupture starring Mark Strange, flying the flag for British sci-fi. And Colin Squire as well on Twitter. Rupture was enjoyable, but a bit slow in places. And finally, Fistful of Vengeance. This is the Wu Assassins follow-up sequel movie on Netflix. That was the favourite film for Michael Pale Bangan on Instagram, who wrote, Fistful of Vengeance, incredible movie. Great. Okay. Thank you so much for all your comments and for getting in touch with us and letting us know what your favourite fight films were of 2022. Okay, those were our honourable mentions. Thank you so much, Mike, for your top five list this year. Before we wrap up, let's take a quick look at the films coming out next year. This is a little section of the show that we like to call Things to Look Forward to in 2023. Things to Look Forward to in 2023. Okay, Mike, I've just sent you a little list there of films, just generally things that are coming out that look interesting next year in 2023. Is there anything out of that lot that's ticking your boxes? There's some big sequels coming out.
Yeah, I think for any fans of Creed, having Creed 3 on the horizon is really exciting.
What do you think about that? I know Stallone's quite upset about Creed 3.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I think there's a bigger story there behind the scenes. I think focusing on Michael B. Jordan directing.
Yeah.
I'll be excited to see what he does. I'm also curious, plot-wise, do we know about the Rocky involvement in the story? No, so we're going to find that out, and I'm curious to see that. But as a fan of the previous films, you know, I'll definitely have that one on my radar. Havoc as well, Gareth Evans' film with Tom Hardy, I'm sure is going to be great. I mean, it can't not be, quite frankly.
Gosh, I cannot wait.
So that will be really exciting to see. And talking about, you know, in the John Wick universe, you've got John Wick Chapter 4, the Continental TV series, Extraction 2.
Extraction 2, that's going to be exciting. Do you know anything about that movie?
No, I think there's only a couple of things that have been teased by either Hemsworth or Mr. Hargrave. But apart from that, you know, details are bare. I should say, sorry, in the John Wick universe, Ballerina as well.
So I believe that's already, maybe that's still being filmed at the moment. Yeah.
And anyone who's a fan of old school Red Sonja, we do have the reboot to look forward to, and we, you know some of the people involved in that, so that will be fun to see, and seeing kind of how they evolve that character and story for 2023.
Big shout out to Donnie Yen's new movie Sakura as well. I know this has been a bit of a labour of love for him. He is starring in it and he's directed that movie as well, working with Kenji Tanigaki as well on the action for that, so I believe that's actually coming out early next year. And also we've got Expendables 4 as well. That could be quite exciting. Jason Statham, I believe, more of the lead in that movie.
I mean, after Expendables 3, I'm less excited. No, but I'll see it and I'll look forward. And it has got a great cast again. They've got, I think, a lot of the old faces back, plus some new people in the mix. So that'll be interesting to see what they do.
Absolutely. So a lot to look forward to there in 2023. Before we go, Mike, thank you so much for agreeing part in this show, our annual end of year roundup. And it's been an absolute pleasure, as always. And thank you so much for inviting me over to your lovely home here. Yes. This has been great. Thank you so much for all your support as well with the show and everything this year. And I do wish you all the very best.
Thank you. And you, sir. Thank you.
Mike, is there anything that you want to plug or promote that's coming up? What's coming up in your world in 2023?
I'll just say thank you to everyone who has obviously been supporting me or my books in the past, anyone who supports Ben and the Great Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast, which I'm always happy to be involved in, and it's fun to do. I'm grateful to all you guys, and hope that you continue enjoying and championing these films, and I look forward to doing more fun things with young Ben in the near future.
Thank you, Mike. And do go and do visit Mike's website, of course, MikeFury.net. Pick up Life of Action Volume 1 and 2 if you haven't bought that already. You've got a lovely line of merchandise as well, I believe.
Yeah, it might. Depends on when this drops. I'll be launching some new merch soon.
Great.
And maybe doing some more, preemptively doing some more stuff in the near future, which is a bit early to say. But yeah, how about you, Ben? What's next? But Ben Johnson.
Well, thank you very much, Mike, for that and for handing over there. So, season 7 of the Kung Fu Movie Guide does continue. Mm-hmm. And we will be going on a little brief pause, but we will have another episode back for all you guys in January. And that'll be once we've recovered from all the mince pies, I suppose, over the next few weeks. In the meantime, do keep it locked, of course, to all the usual KFMG pod channels. That is the best way to keep up to date with all the latest news regarding this podcast. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And do remember to give us a star rating and subscribe to this podcast using your podcast provider. And for all the latest martial arts movie reviews, contact information, access to our newsletter and ways to donate to the show, simply visit our website, kungfumovieguide.com. And if you do want to reach out to me directly, the best way to do so is to send me an email. The email address is hello@kungfumovieguide.com. And that is about it then for 2022. So from me, Ben Johnson, and from him, Mike Fury, we want to wish all of the Foo followers around the world listening to this very happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and all the very best for a wonderful new year.
Thank you, guys. Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
Thank you for all your support in 2022. Take care, stay safe, be well, and bye for now. Thank you, Foo followers. You have been listening to our special two-part end-of-year show 2022, featuring the author of Life of Action Volume 1 and 2, that's Mike Fury. Huge thank you for making it all the way to the very end of this episode. That is marvellous. A couple of additional notes here just to close out the show for this year. A quick recap then of our top five fight-centric action films of 2022. Mike's top five was at number five, The Gray Man. You can watch that on Netflix. Number four was Black Panther Wakanda Forever. That's still on general release here in the UK, as is Mike's number three, Violent Night. Everything Everywhere All at Once, that was Mike's number two. That is available on digital platforms, as is Mike's number one. That's Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday. My top five, at number five, Violent Night. At number four, Baby Assassins, that is available on digital platforms. The Woman King was my number three. That's on general release still here in the UK. And my number two was Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday. And my number one was Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'll be sure to put a link to the full list of movies from this year in the description of this show. And if you have any issues with the list at all, then please do send any hate mail over to Mike Fury. Only kidding. It is always hard to compile these lists every year, and really it is just a bit of fun. You can read reviews of many of the films that were discussed on this episode of the show on our website, kungfumovieguide.com. A huge thank you to Mike Fury for putting up with me once again. When you hear the show, it is nicely condensed into a couple of hours, but we're usually taking most of the day to record this show. We stop and pour drinks and we have a chat, and I rifle through Mike's latest DVDs. We have lunch. It's a really nice, fun day out. So a huge thank you, Mike and Jill, for having me over again this year. Mike's website is mikefury.net. He is also on Twitter and Instagram at @TheMikeFury. Lastly, it just remains for me to wish you, the loyal Foo follower, wherever you are in the world, a very happy holidays and a very happy new year. Thank you so much for checking out the show in 2022. Plenty more to come in 2023, so make sure you subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media to keep up to date with all the latest news regarding this show. Until we meet again, then thank you so much. Take care, everyone. Have a lovely break, and I'll speak to you all again very soon on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Bye for now. So I've just got a bit of spiel here before we get going on this. Okay. I don't have a worst film of the year.
You just said you had two.
And we also heard from some of the big names from the martial arts movie scene who have recorded some special message, some special.
And I'm trying to remember what the story is. So which is, of course, the directorial...
And the email address, which is, as always, hello@kungfumovieguide.com. It's the snowballs. They're repeating. Yeah.
The use of the word, the phrase number two is always going to generate laughs. My number two...
It's a wrap.
Yeah.
We did it.
Cool. Are you happy with that?